Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi everyone, welcome to another Rahulastubba, this week with 90s legend, Games Masters, Dominic Diamond. This is a lot of fun, this one, loads of interesting stuff, I know you're going to enjoy it. We've switched the running order a little bit, so it's slightly out of sequence, so that you can buy and join in with the Kickstarter campaign for the Games Master book. If this podcast whets your appetite, which maybe it will, it's really interesting stuff. I really enjoyed seeing Dominic again for the first time since I was on Games Master. Hey, look, thanks so much, everyone, for all the lovely messages and support over my recent illness. I'm feeling a lot better right now. And hopefully we are now cancer-free and can carry on with these crazy podcasts for the rest of all eternity. I will never die. I am now immortal. Do check out Twitch of Fun on Thursday nights, where my right bollock does get a little mention. New puppets added all the time. And do keep coming back on Wednesdays to Twitch of Fun. We've got some gigs coming up at the Clapham Grand, which will be both live streamed and have a socially distanced audience of about 350 people. So I'm just in the process of trying to book some big names for those. It'd be lovely if you could support us by buying a ticket, either online or in actual person. I'm so excited about doing these for getting back into a theatre in front of an audience again. It's been a tough year doing these in the void, but I hope you've enjoyed them nonetheless. Anyway, that's enough of that. Let's sit back, relax. richardherring.com/gigs, and you'll find out all about who's coming up as soon as I announce them. Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahulastubba with Dominic Diamond. Ladies and gentlemen, nothing's working, Chris. Please welcome the man who's had chemo 5 days ago. Oh, look, it's all loading up. It's Richard Herring! Oh, that won't go away. Ah, it's got away! Hooray! Hello, welcome! We've had some technical difficulties, as always, and hopefully you can see us. I'm a hero, and yeah, I've had chemotherapy 5 days ago, and I'm still here, and I'm not at 100%, but I don't like to use the word hero, but it is what I am. So welcome to Richard Herring's Lone Stargazers Telescope podcast. Woo! I was talking to Sir Patrick Moore the other day. He's doing all right. He was on his xylophone. He calls it Rahalastapa, so I don't know if that's going to catch on. Hopefully that will catch on. Yes, it's been a bit of a weird week for me. Look at that. We've got him. He's the Games Master. He's back. He's back from the dead. If you're watching the video, if you listen to the audio, there's just a picture of Patrick Moore with a big crown on behind me. That's all you need to know. I had chemotherapy on Friday. It's an interesting experience. It's a very light. I just went for the light one. And it's just a one-off, and it's nowhere near as bad as most people will have experienced if they've had chemotherapy. When I went in, the nurse measured me, and she said I was 177 centimetres, which seemed too high to me, but I was a bit befuddled and confused. And I said, "Are you sure I'm 177 centimetres? And she said, yeah, I'm sure. And I said, "Oh, because I thought, she said, maybe it's because you're wearing trainers, you're taller than you think you are. I thought I was about 100, I thought I was under 170. And I went and Googled it, and I was so flattered that she thought I was 5'10" that I nearly didn't tell her. But then I thought maybe that will affect how much chemotherapy they give me. Would it be worth dying just to be of average height just for in one person's mind? I wasn't sure. So that was my main that we did sort it out. I'm 168 centimetres high and proud of it. There hasn't been too many side effects. Luckily, I've lost my appetite a little bit, which is not a problem since I've lost a testicle. I put on a bit of weight as I ate biscuits, but you know, obviously the weight of the testicle was probably half a stone. But I've lost about 3 kilos in the last 3 weeks, and losing my appetite is not a bad thing. Thank you, cancer. That's all I can say. I love cancer. I've tried the cancer diet, and it's working out for me. Great. Don't try and get it. Yeah, I'm not sure. I thought I would get superpowers. All that's happened is I'm quite tired some of the time. Monday I was very tired. Today I'm a little bit tired. Apparently my wee is radioactive or something. I don't know. If I wee on the floor or the seat, I have to wipe it up. If I were to ejaculate, if that were to happen, I have to wear a condom. They didn't talk about what I can do with wanking. So I don't know what the sperm will do. If it lands on me, or the wee or the sperm lands on me, will it burn through me? Will it hurt me? Or can it harm other people? I don't know. They didn't tell me. All I know is I have magical powers. I guess the only other thing that's happened is that my wife has got... I have to have a little injection to get my white blood cells going, which my wife has been doing the last couple of mornings. And I think she's enjoying being able to stick a big needle into my stomach. And it's a bit like I'm a giant-sized voodoo doll of myself. Somewhere a very tiny version of me is probably in great pain, but it's been okay. Thanks for supporting us through Twitch. You know, I've carried on doing this every week. Jeremy Paxman a week after losing my testicles. Today, 5 days after chemo. You don't have to reward me with money, but if you want to subscribe with Amazon Prime to Twitch, that would be lovely. Do remember to resubscribe if you can. And let's get on with it. Let's see how it goes. If I fall asleep during the show, it is no indication of what our guest's interestingness. He is probably best known as part of David Icke and the Orphans of Jesus. That's why we're all here to see him today. Will you please welcome the amazing Dominic Diamond, ladies and gentlemen? Hopefully there he is.
Thank you Dominic very Diamond. Much. Thank you.
That's my pleasure. Lovely to see you all the way from Canada, I understand.
Yes, it's a sunny day in Canada. I hope it looks okay. I was slightly, I know I've got a lot to live up to visually after Jeremy Paxman and his wonderful attempt at homage of that girl in the Blair Witch Project scene. So I hope
you're just going to have a gigantic bulb behind your head just to make yourself look like you're possibly tiny. That's what most people do.
Yes.
First of all, I just want to say I was very sorry to hear about Dustin. You must have been very upset about it. So I thank you for still doing this show after. I imagine he's your brother, Dustin Diamond.
Yeah, that leaves me as the second biggest diamond standing after Anne. Neil gets really fucked off because he's number three, four. He's way down. No one. It's been a long time since he had a hit. But just Anne, as soon as she dies, she's not dead, is she? That would be terrible.
She's not. She's still going. I've been on a couple of shows with Anne Diamond. I remember when Anne Diamond first came on Nationwide and she did.
Did she really?
Was doing something.
Was it Radioactive?
Yes. She was doing the Brit Awards, her first report I saw on, wearing a kind of funky headband. And I thought, and I was a young man, I was a boy probably, but I thought she was a very, very sexy woman. My first impression of Anne Diamond. And she still is, I think.
Yeah. But, does she smell of anything about, in particular? Like fragrance?
Does she smell? I didn't pick up a fragrance from her. I think I was on the right stuff with her. That's how.
Oh yeah, I used to be on that.
The big time, isn't it? That's the people who were in the 1990s. So look, it's lovely to see you. I don't think we've met since I was on Games Master. Is that right? We may have bumped into each other at some party along the way.
It's been a while.
I
hoped we would have ended up closer than that, but no, it really was just a thank you, Dominic. Goodbye. Ignoring my calls for. a quarter of a century.
It's a quarter of a century, and it's 1995, so more than a quarter of a century. It's very impressive.
Wow.
I didn't know this about you, so there's lots I've found out researching this week. This David Icke and the Orphans of Jesus is actually a fairly big deal, because this is your university comedy club night.
Yes.
That you organised at Bristol University. So tell us a little about that first, because that is...
Yeah, it was. It turned out to be quite a kind of launching pad for people. There was me. There was a guy called Simon Pegg, another guy called David Walliams, Jason Bradbury, who went on to present the Gadget Show in the UK, Mavanwy Moore, who was the executive producer of Little Britain and like Queen of BBC Comedy or something. And yeah, so I was the kind of first one to do stand up. And I thought, I mean, I was a poor student and I wanted a way of fleecing others to make money. So all these other guys were interested in doing comedy. So I was like, well, let's put a weekly night on. And and I have, I think it might even appear in the book that we'll talk about. I've got like an account sheet from the time. And basically, I think that Simon and David and everyone ended up with £12.50. A week. I ended up getting, I got three times, it was run on socialist principles because obviously, you know, we were students. So everybody got a unit of the takings on the door, but I got a unit for being MC, a unit for organizing, and a unit for my own bit in it. So I got three times the money of Simon Pegg, which was the last time that happened.
We take that for just a day now. Could we have one day, three times?
Exactly. but it's interesting because there's a VHS video of it somewhere and I can't find it. But Simon was absolutely astonishing. He went on that stage, a fully fledged comic behemoth. It was a swimming pool lifeguard character that he had, that wrote poems about his obsessive love for Diane Keaton. And it was brilliant. It was genius. He just could move an audience in a way that I realized I was never going to be able to do. And I mean, I was okay, but I had to work so hard at it and write jokes and hone them. And it just seemed Simon could just do it like that, you know, which was amazing. David Walliams was shit though. Him and Jason were pretty crap, but Simon, brilliant.
Yeah, it's interesting though that there's a few little pockets where, like at a university at a certain time, there's a group of people, and whether it's just there's one person at the centre who's pushing that group to all go and try and be professional, or whether it is just I was in the middle, Armando Iannucci, Stuart Lee, Al Murray, Sally Phillips, Rebecca Front, and all sort of David Schneider, all sorts of people at the same time as me. There's one in Durham University, which we've been discussing quite recently in recent episodes in the sort of 2000s. It's sort of interesting that suddenly like a big group of people appear in one place and all go on to do something. It doesn't happen that often. I wonder I don't know what the magic is that makes that happen. But if you knew.
Well, I think in our case, it was me.
It was you.
Yeah. And you know, do I get any thanks for it? Am I, you know, regaled, celebrated for that? No, it's all fucking video games. What can you do? What?
I feel like with our group, I was the one, so I knew I wanted to be a comedian, so I was pushing and I had a plan, you know, to go to London and do all this stuff. And so I feel like we did carry a few people along with us who might not have who might not have been comedians, but that's how it's ended up. That's an auspicious start, an amazing beginning to start with all those guys. And also I'm interested, you're in Canada now. Let's talk about this first before we talk about anything else.
Yeah.
You moved to Canada to become a llama farmer. Is this what I've heard in other interviews?
Yeah, pretty much. So when it was like 2008, I noticed that there was I thought the UK was becoming a very violent place. And it seemed that every week there was a story of a dad about the same age as me who would be going out into the street to break up a fight among teenagers and we'd end up getting stabbed. And I was just like, the felt this was a horrible inevitability about this. So I wanted my kids to kind of grow up in a bit more of a tolerant place. And so we thought about it. But at the time, I was the, and I used chief in the smallest sense of the word, chief columnist at the Daily Star, which was a ridiculous amount of money to be paid as a father of three. So I kept saying to my wife, no, we can't do it. We can't do it because her family's Canadian. We can't do it because I'm getting paid all this money. And I was walking into a bespoke tailor in Edinburgh one morning and there was a phone call from Don Neeson, the editor of the Daily Star, who said, yeah, I'm really sorry, Dominic, but the owner, Richard Desmond, has decided he wants to purge all columnists. And I'm so glad that she said that before I went and bought the suit. And so I said to my wife, I said, fuck it, that's it. I said, let's. And we literally went to Nova Scotia on vacation because I had really cheap houses there. And we fell in love with the place, found a farm, and we were like, shall we become farmers? And, you know, in all our midlife crisis stupidity and ignorance, said, why the hell not? What could possibly go wrong? So we moved over with our three kids and we had this big yellow farmhouse and the llamas weren't even there. By the time we got there, we were really stitched up by the despicable owners whose retirement in Mexico we single-handedly funded the fucks. And you know, hey, there's some people I wish had cancer. Seriously. Anyway, they should. I hope he's getting a ball removed right now, Richard. I wish your ball had been his ball. Basically. Wow. So basically we had a fantastic time and I didn't do any work. We thought we'll just live off our savings and I had a Dharmid Gavin and Terence Conran gardening book. So I made a vast flower meadow and all these things like that. And it was great fun. It was the first time I hadn't kind of, you know, worked since I was like 21 and it was beautiful, but we ran out of money in a year. And I was a classic unskilled, unqualified immigrant drain on the resources of Canada. So I literally started from the bottom as a complete unknown, sending off my CV to radio people and then started working for what is the tiniest radio station in Canada, CKBW Bridgewater, Nova Scotia. And I was literally having to read at the weekend lost pet announcements. And my wife used to call me Alan Partridge. She's like, you are Alan Partridge, for real. So I managed to kind of claw my way up the greasy pole and across Canada to a certain level of success, luckily. Yeah. So, but I'm not a farmer anymore.
Not a farmer anymore.
But
and
I like gardening.
Did the llamas, did they take the llamas to Mexico with them or did they just let them go?
Who
or
knows?
They all die?
Do you know what? Bearing in mind how evil they are, they probably use them as some kind of pansexual satanic sacrifice. Nothing was beneath those people who sold us that house. Evil people.
No. Amazing. Well, look, let's go back to... So you came out of university.
Yeah.
And having done comedy, you did a lot of comedy. It's very similar to me, I think. You did a lot of drama and comedy at university.
Yes.
Not much work. And spend a lot of money on fruit machines. It sounds like my exact. I probably had sex with one or two people in your whole time at university. No, did better.
More.
Okay. Yeah.
Hunters. Well Hunters, done. As they say in Scotland.
So you were from Arbroath. So it's from a working class family in Arbroath.
Yes.
And did you go back to Arbroath after university? Was that the the plan, or did you?
No, my parents had moved down to the wonderful Newport Pagnell, Buckinghamshire, just outside of London, because my youngest brother and sister went to the illustrious Sylvia Young Theatre Academy in London.
Oh, nice!
And so my family moved down to Scotland so they could go to school. So we were down there. I never went back to Arbroath, and I did that horrible thing that I think a lot of working class people do when they get a bit of money, is they completely disassociate themselves with their original town and slag it off. And in Arbroath's case, I would say it smells of fish, and that was a real shame, because it's a lovely, brilliant place, and the people of Arbroath have been so incredibly loyal to me. They were literally the only people who watched my own Twitch show when it was running. It was literally the town of Arbroath, and that was it. And so I wish I'd spent more time. I wish I'd given more back to the town of Arbroath over the years, Richard. I hope it's something I can possibly correct at
There's
some
still
point.
Time. You There's know, still
build,
time.
Build a youth hostel, something.
Yeah, you know, sure you could do some good there. Yeah. So, was the plan to get into TV? You auditioned for things like the Word and stuff, but was that the first thing you did to audition for The Word?
Yeah, that was, because I realised how bad I was at stand-up comedy back then. And I think it's one thing when you do it within the relatively safe confines of your own university, like the student balls and everything like that. It's a really friendly crowd. But I, like Icarus, I flew too high. But I got noticed by Frank Skinner's agent. They did a little comedy workshop in Bristol, and I did my bit. And Frank's agent was like, "Oh, come and support Frank and Phil Jupitus, and you know, come and work some working men's clubs in Birmingham." So I'm like, "Oh yeah, this is it. This is the big time." So I did that as a 19-year-old, and was absolutely destroyed by the public. And it was my own fault. I should have stuck to what I knew, which was, you know, jokes about buying good condoms in a small town of Arbroath where everybody knows you. But instead, because I was a student and I thought I had to be anti-Thatcher and left-wing, and 19-year-old left-wing comedians with little round glasses and no facial hair really just get laughed off stage. Brummies just literally go, "Fuck off, you spicky fucking twat," or however they sound these days. Not like that, sorry. Peaky Blinders, I haven't watched enough.
You've been in Canada a long time.
I have. So I was very, very much looking for a way to not do stand-up comedy. And yeah. And then luckily they had the open auditions for The Word. I think it was the first ever kind of search for a star reality TV thing that ever happened. And so I got to the last 12 and wasn't physically attractive enough. And so luckily Games Master were looking for someone who was not physically attractive, and they were also very lazy, so they called up the makers of The Word and said, "Do you have a geek?" And they said, and one of them said, "Yeah, there was this kind of vaguely funny Scottish geek," and they were like, "Oh great, tick that little minority as well, let's give him an audition." So I was lucky that I'm, you know, 21 years old and I got the show. So
yeah, so and Games Master was basically the whole of the 1990s. There was a series you didn't do,
or yes,
a series or two you didn't do,
yes.
And basically you were sort of employed it was immediately a big success, really, wasn't it? And getting good viewing figures for Channel 4,
one of the biggest,
and, yeah,
one of the biggest.
and so that, but that's it's.
It was like it was like Emmerdale Farm, Games Master, East End, or something like that. No, it was good.
We were lucky.
We were very lucky, Richard. I mean, you know, to have the video games industry booming at the same time as doing a TV show about it. Yeah. We literally, the games industry and the Games Master TV show just gave each other reach arounds for the rest of the 90s in a mutually beneficial way. So it was a stroke of extreme luck, really.
But then to be so young and to be discovered almost from nowhere and then be sort of propelled into that situation, I mean, a lot of fun. It sounds like you had a lot of fun, but it's also quite difficult to cope. You know, it took us a little bit longer to get established, but we're still sort of 25 when we're on TV, and that turns your head and it, oof, you know, makes you behave like an arsehole.
Yeah, very much so.
And it sounds like from what I've read and heard, you know, you were partying through the 90s pretty exclusively when you weren't working.
I was. And what's been interesting about writing this book, I don't know if we actually mentioned the title of it yet. It's okay if we haven't.
Tell us the
I like you. It's all right. It's cool. Because this is a long form conversation. That's all right. That's cool. As long as it doesn't go full Stephen Merchant, I'm okay. So it's Games Master, The Oral History. See what we did there. And this really is the first time that the complete story has been told from the points of view of not just myself, but the producers, the directors, the researchers, the runners, the civilian contestants, if we can use that phrase, and celebrity contestants such as yourself, who kindly contributed their memories. And what has been, and it's me kind of running this thread throughout the whole thing, the story of not just the show, but what it was like for someone who was way too young to have that level of fame. And how I coped, or rather didn't cope with it.
Yeah.
And what has been amazing about the book is so many bits I'd read that other people writing about, and I would go like, we didn't do that, did we? And they say, no, we did. I said, no fucking way. And then they say, look, here's the photograph. And they'd be like, me and the llama. And I'd be like, oh my God, you're absolutely correct. So it was very much a voyage of discovery for me, this book as well. I feel like it's a painting by numbers thing that was only half filled in the 90s for me, and now it's fully fleshed.
Right, because I didn't really party very much in the night. We were working quite hard, but I was too shy, I think, to go out very much. I stayed in a lot. I stayed in playing video games a lot, but not getting paid for doing that. And I didn't really go to. I went to maybe about 5 or 6 showbiz parties, I think, and found them overwhelming.
Yeah,
and I never got into. I didn't take drugs at all at that time. When I was a bit older, I tried cocaine, but I didn't take cocaine in my 20s or my teens.
Yeah.
But you did take cocaine in your 20s.
Yeah, I took cocaine. Cocaine took me. I took all the cocaine, all of it. Poor Liam Gallagher just took what was left. And I shouldn't be flippant about it because my mum is almost certainly watching this and she gets very upset about this aspect of my life. But I think I felt the same as you, Richard. And I write about this in the book that I was so uncomfortable with that level of recognition and fame that all of a sudden here was alcohol, cocaine, speed, all these things that just gave you a kind of veneer and made you gave you a supreme amount of confidence that I didn't have. But also the thing about cocaine, and I'm not using this as in any way an advocate, it makes boring people less boring. And I used to get so bored with the same people asking the same questions that all of a sudden I would hoover up a line and I'd be like, yeah, I'll gladly talk about my favorite video game. So it was a real shame, and it had repercussions down the line for me, in terms of relationships and in terms of psychologically. And in fact, it's one of when I mentioned Mavami Moore, who was in David Icke and The Orphans of Jesus and was the producer of Little Britain, and she was my kind of second serious ever girlfriend. We went out for years, and she was so wonderfully helpful. She was such a wonderful kind of anchor for me at that time. But because I started, unbeknownst to her, battering the ching chang, and I ended up finishing that relationship, not going up to see my family. And that was the last kind of bit of the anchor that chained me to reality. So from about 93, 94, it was just absolutely going tonto, rock stars and footballers and all that. I was just basically, I was loaded magazine, made flesh.
Well, I think that's when me and Stu were on the show, I think that's because we were sort of resistant to the new lab thing, although we were slightly pigeonholed with it, but we always felt that a bit uncomfortable. And I think we were probably like a little bit standoffish when we were on the show because we thought, there was a double element because, we were showing. I remember about being on is we're walked onto stage by these two beautiful girls in scanty clothes.
Yeah.
Which, there's a part of me thinking, I don't like this, and there's a part of me thinking I really like this, and I better keep my eyes up front. You were sort of confused about it, but it did feel like quite a laddie show. But I suppose there was a charm to Games Master because it was geeky and laddie, but laddie, teenage laddie, I suppose, in a way as well. It was almost in between, is it? I suppose.
Yeah, I think it was. It was always that, and I know it's. Listen, let's be honest. It's completely indefensible in 2021, right? That's it. I mean, not probably none of those shows would be able to be shown. I'm so glad that my children, even though they're massive gamers and teenagers and everything now, they're aware of Games Master. They treat it with complete indifference. They haven't even watched the show. My wife never watched the show, and I'm quite glad about that now, because my kids are extremely woke, and I would have no chance at justifying it. But what I liked, and I do make an effort to justify it in the book, and the only what I can say is that all of the double entendres, especially with female contestants and female guests, they were always co-participants in it. I always did a pre-chat with them. So I would always gauge for myself, are you up for this? Is this the way you're going to go? And sometimes I would go that way. Sometimes I wouldn't. You have someone like Zoe Ball on, and she was completely up for it. And she out-knob-gagged me on the show when she was on. She was playing the game on the motorbike. And I just said to her, have you ever ridden a motorbike before? She goes, no, but I like it up the back. And I mean, that's the justification. That's like, okay, fine. We're both playing the same game. You're actually, it's not a power thing. We've both got equal power. You know, that's the whole thing. We've all read our Theories of Comedy by Jonathan Miller and whatnot. It's all about the power, isn't it? And I felt that in most cases, the power was equal when it came to female contestants and guests on the show.
I don't think, you know, it didn't feel super. There were things that were super. Well, I mean, Loaded was sort of nasty. But even, you know, even I remember me and Stu having to do, you know, you were made, not made to do, but you were, it was suggested you should do certain things. And we had to do photo shoots for Loaded, which were us in swimming costumes, squirting sun cream over each other, which at least was fine. If we'd been with models, it would have felt weird, but it was it was pretty weird. But I mean, I'm sure that, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's sort of interesting because, well, let's talk about the Lee and Herring on Games Master experience, because we were on and we had to.
It was a terrible thing we made you do. It was awful.
We had to edit to. Well, it was quite. I think it was quite a good thing to do for us, actually, because I don't think either of us would have been particularly adept, and especially Stu at video games. Yeah. So we had to edit together something and make a little short film from an editing package, but it was very limited. Yeah. And it was then judged by, it can't have been actually judged by Patrick Moore because he wasn't in the studio, right? But it was
how very dare you suggest that there was not 100% authenticity on that show? You know, Patrick Moore was there, not Patrick Moore. Sorry, you know, Games Master was there in the corner.
He was there.
You were sitting on his knee and everything. You and Stu, you know, you loved it.
But anyway, the Games Master decided I was the best at doing that game.
Yeah.
And I won the Golden Joystick. And, you know, I think that it's the only thing for a long time that I'd ever won on almost in anything. And yet it did. I can't even quite remember what happened. It definitely has gone, right?
Yeah.
Which I regret.
No, you know, it has gone. You know, don't pretend you don't know, because this honestly.
It's definitely gone, but I can't remember how it went.
Well, because fucking Stu smashed it.
No, that wasn't the real one. That wasn't the real one.
Oh, yeah, because I thought.
It was already. We'd already. I think we moved offices and we had to clear stuff out. And I keep everything, and I don't know why I didn't keep it. And even just to eBay it now, I'd get like 200 quid for it or something.
Oh, you get more than that. Oh, jeez. Oh, yeah. No, this one guy went to sell one for £5,000 a couple of months ago.
Wow.
But I think it was, yeah, because I remember watching that. Was it the This Morning with Richard, Not Judy? I think it might have been that one.
It was one of the shows. Well, yeah, I don't completely remember.
Stu smashed it. And the thing is, of course, he was always going to do that. And actually, I like to think that I probably picked you to win that movie thing, because there's always what you'll find is when someone is that pretty, that young, there's always something of the night about him. And Stuart Lee, there was always that thing about him. Yeah. So it was no surprise that he was the one that smashed the joystick, because he probably took a lot of fun in what was genuinely one of the most upsetting moments of my entire life. It's fucking horrible of him.
Well, he was jealous. You know, he'd lost. It wasn't good for the Lee and Herring dynamic for him to lose. That didn't happen. So that it bucked that trend.
Yeah.
And so therefore him smashing it was a good thing to do. But I think the BBC made us a replica one, but only because I think I'd thrown away the original one, which I don't know why I did that. I don't know why I didn't think this is an amazing thing to have. I don't know why I was full of shame about having been on Games Master.
Do you know who still has theirs, right?
Who?
Robbie Williams.
Wow.
Now, he kindly has written the foreword for the book. And one of the reasons is because, and it's a fantastic foreword, it really is. He says it's had pride of place in every house he's had since. And he's had a lot of fucking houses, that guy. You know that. And so, yeah, apparently he says that the MTV awards and all that, they're in a cupboard, but the Games Master Golden Joystick is on his mantelpiece all the time. So I'm glad that there was at least one person, you know, who respected it.
He appreciated the true value. And
he
does. All I remember is it was filmed in the same studio as the Big House in the Country by Blur.
Yeah, Blur Country House.
Big House in the Country. And all the props for that video were just sort of strewn around the set while we were recording. And I was very excited about that.
That was very special. I actually, if I can crowbar this in just now, because I don't want to forget about it, and it seems apt, that I've written some verse about your appearance on the show that day. And it's one of the rewards that we have on the Kickstarter page. So we funded it on day one completely, which was a great relief, because public humiliation is a terrible thing. So I'm very pleased that we did it. And we had a lot of Dominic Diamond flavored rewards, and they all went. And one of them was the Poet Master, which is basically you get the book and I write a bespoke limerick in the pages of the book in about the buyer and the show Games Master. So you're yoked finally for eternity for the poor people who didn't manage to get on the show. But of course, you did get on the show. So here's just an example, just a couple of things. You know, I'm the same way that you don't like to be called a hero. I don't like to be called a poet. I can work in different forms. You know, I can shit out quatrains with the best of them. You know, haikus, piece of piss. But limerick, I think, is actually one of the more challenging verse forms, because you've got the two tiny little lines, line 3 and 4 of the limerick. It's only like 5-6 syllables. That's really hard.
Okay,
so,
well, I'm glad. It's good to see to the artist process here, to have that explained.
I'm quite transparent about it. So what I've tried to do is even then, Richard, that wasn't ambitious enough for me. I tried to incorporate your life today into the limerick as well. Okay, so there's two. Here's the first one. A funny young fellow called Rich came on Games Master with his bitch. Am I allowed to say that? In 2020? Yep. Okay, fine. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's all right because it's about a man, so that's fine.
A funny young fellow called Rich came on Games Master with his bitch. They each made a movie. Rich's was groovy. He's got a joystick and one ball he can itch. So, trying to bring the cancer in a gentle, humorous way.
That was nice.
Number two, Rich came on a show called Games Master. He made his movie better and faster. The golden joystick he won, then in 2021, found his testicles covered in plasters. Again, I'm trying to just make cancer more approachable, like you have
done.
That's
good, yeah. It is
so
good.
That's the kind thing I'll write in the book for people. And we've just, because they all went straight away. So we've just literally, to tie in with the show, released 50 more of those on the Kickstarter page right now. So whether you've had testicular problems or not, that's not an essential part.
I hope that isn't all that survives of my memory or of our civilization, because it'll just imply that all I did in my career was be on Games Master and lose a ball. And I feel I've done more than that.
There are people who would be proud. There are people who've achieved
less. That's enough.
Pretty Patel.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And well, let's do a few more bits of Games Master memories. You married Wigfield. I that was in the same series as we did, I think. Yeah. It was in 1995.
Yes.
You married, was that a legally binding wedding to Wigfield?
I know it was a toss-up between what we were going to do with Wigfield and what we were going to do with Lee and Herring. So, you know, you got away with that one, I guess. No, it's not. I don't think it's legally binding. She's not answering my calls either, so who knows. But what I thought was brilliant about that was, having just said, oh, yeah, you know, we were always very, made sure that all the female guests were prepped in advance and they were, no, we didn't tell Wigfield anything about that. But I think that speaks to the underrated genius of the Europop queen. The fact that she had no clue what was happening. She comes on, she obviously doesn't, you know, speak English as a first language. And then all of a sudden this random guy gets down on one knee and proposes to her. But she goes with it. She goes with it with a level of self-awareness that I don't think Scandinavia has in general. And I've got, a lot of my wife's family are Scandinavian and they're humorless fucks. I mean, they have no sense of humor whatsoever. So I think that was, she was phenomenal about that. She was brilliant. She was a lot of fun, but I never saw her after that.
No. Yeah, it's the story of your life. Well, it's sort of like this, you know, it's a snapshot of the night. There could be Lee and Herring and Wigfield and Dominic Diamond.
Yeah.
It's the 1990s. That is the 1990s.
That's brilliant. That's it. In Soho House, basically. In Soho House, in London. That's it. That is it. Watching Euro 96.
And is it true that you only met Patrick Moore on one occasion, right at the end of the series?
Yeah, that is true. And it's weird because it's weird thinking back on the show and realizing that we were a double act of sorts. A lot of people, you know, think of Dominic Diamond and then immediately think of Patrick Moore, like you were a comedy double act. But we never, you know, I had no hand in any of his stuff. I didn't write any of his stuff. I didn't meet him until the last day. I think having watched the shows again for the book, he's considerably better than I am. I was appalled. I think we do things, especially when we're in our 20s, and we think we are absolutely brilliant. We think we're absolutely fantastic. We're just the shit. And looking back at series one and two of Games Master, I think I'm dreadful. I think I'm really bad. It's not me, for a start. I think I'm playing a character that I'm not like at all. And then I went away for series three, and then I came back for series four, and I felt really indignant and angry with the show, you know, because they fucking, you know, got Dexter in and it didn't work out, and then they had to get me back, and I'm like, yeah, fuck you, fuck everyone. So series four, I'm very angry. And it really wasn't until series five, which you were on and Wigfield, that I finally settled down a bit. And I think I'm okay. But Patrick Moore, for someone who, as far as I know, had no formal comic training, he wasn't at Durham or Bristol University or Cambridge.
He was.
No. Was he? Patrick?
Who knows where he was?
Oh, yeah. I suddenly thought you were going to say, no, Patrick Moore was in Footlights. And I thought, my God, I would have paid to see that.
I'm sure he went to university, but he probably studied the cosmos.
Exactly. But he just managed to deliver these lines brilliantly, just brilliantly comedically, despite genuinely not knowing one end of a Nintendo Entertainment System from the other. So he was a much underrated comic genius. I've said it. I'll put my name to that quote. He was. Yeah. He really was. So yeah, I just met him on poetically the very last day of filming, and he was coming out having done his bits. I was going in to do some voiceover. And he had no idea who I was, didn't even recognize me. Bastard. I had to actually say to him, Dominic Diamond, from fucking Games Master, Patrick. Oh, yes, young man. Hello, young man. And so we spoke about cricket. He was a big cricket fan and apparently a bit of a closet racist. But okay. We didn't talk about that. There's different aspects. People knew Patrick a bit more than I did, a bit better, and they have very different recollection of what the real Patrick Moore was like when he'd had a curry and a couple of sherries, which apparently was part of his contract. After filming, he would go and get taken for a curry.
It's kind of extraordinary that you could have not, I mean, A, that you bumped into him on the very last possibility that you could, but that had never happened in the previous 8 years or whatever that you'd been working with him. It's sort of,
it's
almost unbelievable.
It's almost like the kind of fake anecdote you would make up for a book, but it isn't. I've got corroboration.
But I love the fact that generation of guys, they would, and we were the same, you know, we would have lots of people on our shows, you know, the older generation comedians, and it was always, you know, slight, we weren't as mean as some, like, I think The Word was a mean show, and you know, the Ian Lee show was sometimes a bit mean about people. We were sort of generous and loving about them, but it was always veiled in irony, you know. You'd have Bernie Clifton on, or whoever that we liked, or Brian Cantu we loved, but, you know, we're making him do something weird. But they, you know, for them, this is a job.
Brian
Cantu. We're going to do it well. And they would always come on and be so professional and so brilliant. And also, ultimately, they knew because they were older, and so they could see us for the idiots we were.
Yeah.
And they knew that if they just did the job well, that they were winning, basically. So, you know, it was... But I think we were never cruel with that, and I think some people are sort of cruel in terms of that kind of has been thing. But, you know, that comes around to bite you, doesn't it? You know, I think that's the thing, because I think if you've been in show business or whatever on TV for that length of time, if you're in your 70s or 80s, you're going to go, you know, people come and go, and you know these kids are thinking, oh, look at this guy who's famous 20 years ago.
Yeah.
In 20 years' time, he'll be on Twitch doing his show to people in Arbroath.
No idea who you're talking about there. That sounds like that would be really sad. It's funny you mentioned Brian Cant, because when I was still working for BBC Radio 5 Live, and we did one show, a weekly kind of comedy show with a very small C. And as part of it, we had childhood icons who came on to review the latest record releases. So it was a wonderful chance for me to get all these people like Brian Jacks from Superstars and Dr. Robert from the Blow Monkeys was another one. And we had Tony Arthur from Playaway. And I am not, I couldn't speak. I was so in love with her. She came into the studio. She was just still the most beautiful woman that I'd ever seen in my life. And it was also responsible for the single most toe-cringingly embarrassing moment of my entire career. And so Brian Jacks... And in case people don't remember, so he was a judo performer, and there was a thing called Superstars, which was a wonderful TV show where all these different sportsmen from different things, football and athletics and whatnot, competed in things like squat thrusts and dips and everything like that. And it was a brilliant show. Brian Jacks was the best ever. He like won it more years than anyone. So we thought it was a real coup to get him on the show. And he came on and he was reviewing the latest single by The Corrs, the lovely Irish band with the lovely sisters and that one brother. Yeah. And I said to him live on the BBC, so Brian, what do you think about The Corrs? And he said, if I was their father, I'd still be barfing him. It was like, what? What? It was just like still the most jaw-dropping moment I can ever imagine. You know, anyone ever go? But then, you know, compared to you and, you know, Stephen Merchant and stuff like that, that's a walk in the park. And Richard E. Grant, that's probably nothing.
You know? It's probably nothing. He had to stretch. You know, he isn't their father, but if I was, I would have to put myself imagine. To make this uncomfortable, I have to imagine. Tony Arthur was not my neighbour for a while.
Really?
The same street as me in Clapham. Yes, I knew her a little. I'd bump into her a little bit and say hello to her. And yeah, so it's sort of that's a weird thing because, you know, we'd known Tony Arthur since we were 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah.
And so then to actually, it's one of those things. And that's what I guess that all those things where people meet these old time people veiled in irony.
Yeah.
They still are, you still know that they love it because they're still the little kids who are watching them on TV. So
exactly.
it's
All I know is if Tony Arthur was my neighbour, you know, and I was still a child, she'd still be buffing me. No, that's even worse. I've just basically done to Tony Arthur what you did to Stephen Merchant. No.
She's a very lovely woman.
She is, yes. Oh, my poor mum. Shit. My mum's like that, and I don't know if you ever had parental concerns raised about your stuff, but my mum was always that person who said, "You're going to be doing the nasty stuff again." Remember, they've got a mum too. I'd say, "But mum, it's David Beckham that I'm ripping the piss out. He's still got a mum. Even Victoria Beckham's got a mum." And I say, "Do you really know that for sure? Was she not ripped from a jackal?" But no. So yeah, my mum has been a real kind of a guiding kind of force attempt at good in my life, sadly for her.
I think my parents have basically got used to it. They do watch it. I think they watch everything I do on this now. So I do a stupid puppet show. But because my main puppet is this 129-year-old ventriloquist dummy that my great-granddad made, I think they're sort of they're actually quite pleased that I'm using it and doing quite well with it, even though I'm just making it say disgusting things. So they seem to be able to tune out the
that's important,
the rudeness and the disgustingness of it all. So there's so much to talk to you about, don't it?
And I'm going to try and get. Is there though?
There is really. There is quite a lot.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you, Richard. I appreciate that.
I think it's you know we've had a similar-ish sort of experience, I guess, and not in exactly the same way, but I think it's interesting that whole. I think you were more successful than us in the 90s, really. You were more famous than us in the 90s.
Yes, and then, but you have been considerably more successful since.
Well, we've gone into different ways. But we both had to, you know, cope with losing, you know, not having that anymore. Mm. Did you find that a difficult thing to transition from the TV to... I mean, I know it was a progression. It wasn't just one day it was there and one day it wasn't, but... Was it a welcome relief, or was it a difficult transition to not be on TV anymore, not be famous anymore?
I don't know, because I think that I honestly never ever I hate seeing my face on television. I hate seeing my face. I mean, I hate seeing my face on this. It's horrific. So thank you. So I never liked watching the shows back. I never watched a lot of the shows back. I never had after Games Master Live, basically, when Series 2, and we did this massive event at the Birmingham NEC, the kind of stadium stuff that you guys would have ended up doing. And that terrified me, that amount of people in a room with me really scared the shit out of me. So I was never looking for that. I just wanted to be able to kind of do good work and do kind of stuff I wanted. So from that point of view, it was very disappointing that I loved video games, but I really loved music. And all I wanted to do really was to do funny stuff about music on Radio 1 or do comedy shows or stuff. And I never got the chance to do that until the XFM show in Scotland in the 2000s. Where I finally, it was the only first time I'd ever done something since Games Master that I thought, okay, this is what I want to do. But I was very lucky that from being a working class kind of kid, the money is a really important part of it. That all the extra spin-off stuff and things like gravitating towards being a columnist for the Daily Star, you know, that paid us more money. So it wasn't something that I wasn't sitting there. For example, I wasn't sitting in Canada in 2021, you know, thinking, fucking hell, I hope this Kickstarter comes off. You know, so it was never like that. So it was more of kind of career goals that was disappointing rather than any kind of loss of profile or anything like that. And that's how what has been great about this lucky second career in Canada on the radio is that it's radio. And in spite of evil, stupid, cynical radio bosses' attempts to say, oh, let's make fucking YouTube videos. No, it's radio. Shut up. Fucking people want to watch videos. They watch the telly, you idiots. So my face is not known really in Canada. So as long as I put on a Richard Herring accent, for example, when I go and get my milk, it's been all right. I've been kind of, you know, relatively obscure, which has been which has been good, I guess.
Yeah. And do you feel, because I feel like you were quite a Is bolshy the right word? You got into fights with people. You had a certain degree of confidence, which may have come along with the drugs.
Yes.
Do you feel that because of that you missed? Because I heard you on one of the interviews I heard you to talk about today, missing out on sort of fronting the BBC football coverage, that you just sort of turned it down.
Yeah,
that sort of through arrogance.
Yeah, that was really silly. Bob Shannon, who actually became, he was like the head of Radio 2, I think, at one point, and was like a massive figure in the BBC. He started off, sadly for him, as my immediate boss on the sports call show that I did. He was the editor. So the poor guy had to deal with me throughout the 90s. And I remember him saying to me, right, listen, Dominic, we really feel that you need to move on from sports call. You've done it for 9 years and it's been great and it's been a success, but we want you to spread your wings a bit more. We'd really like you to become one of the rotating anchors on our main Saturday football coverage. Now, any normal person would have gone, thank you so much, but that is the most incredible career break. Someone my age in my late 20s could have. This will transition me perfectly over into the next calmer stage of my career. And I literally said to him, fuck you, Bob, I want to do comedy. And I fucking walked out. What an idiot. What an absolute idiot. I have burnt more bridges than the retreating Nazi army did. I mean, it was just absolutely horrific. And it was very, very stupid, especially the BBC, because if you're lucky enough to get into, I mean, I was lucky enough to get Games Master. And then the fact of, you know, a year later, thanks to, in a roundabout manner, thanks to Dave Lee Travis quitting Radio 1 on air, and then Nicky Campbell moving from Radio 5 to Radio 1, and me having the same agent as Nicky Campbell, I just got given a show at the BBC. All these poor people, it's the biggest dream, and I get that at 23. And once you're in the BBC, don't ever leave. Don't ever leave, no matter what you have to do. And because it's, you realize when you go to the commercial side of things, and especially commercial radio, it's awful. Okay, by comparison, there's the level of support and funding. I mean, I did a talk show in Edinburgh, Talk 107, where I did a drive time show, and it was a phone-in news show without a producer, without a researcher, without even someone to answer the phones. So it'd be me and my co-host, and we'd be talking about all the breaking news in Edinburgh, which, you know, outside of that 1 month a year, and where the fringe is nothing. And then we'd have to, the phone lines would be flashing and we couldn't screen them. We had to go to a break, answer all these calls, have them lined up. And I kept thinking, Sports Call on the BBC was a 1 hour quiz show. I had 10 people working on that show alone. So it's a source of much, much, much regret. That, you know, it really is. It was so bad. And my mum just now is nodding. My mum is nodding now, going, I told you. Because one of the horrible things of that was my mum actually worked for me at that time. And this is the worst thing that I ever did. No. Yeah, it was probably the worst thing in a lot of ways. So my mum worked for my production company. And kind of like was the, you know, kind of ran the office and helped on Sports Call and appeared on my shows. And she literally was saying to me, she came up to me one day and said, Dominic, listen, don't think I don't know what you're doing. I see you on all your funny researchers hoovering up the cocaine all the time. You know, you need to stop that. It's turning you into a terrible person. And I literally was like, yeah, you think that's terrible? You're fired. So I fired my own mum. And yes, these stories are fucking engaging stories now in retrospect. But the serious side is that, honestly, if anybody is in any way thinking ever of doing cocaine, don't. I mean, it's the most horrific. It turns you into an absolute monster. It makes you do the most terrible, evil things. And so, So that was it. That's the only time I ever fell out with my mum. And luckily we patched it up eventually. But I will go to my grave feeling apologetic about that. It's a terrible thing to do, you know.
On the other hand, I didn't take cocaine, and so I never got invited to any of the parties, so I didn't really get to network with anyone, and so my career wasn't successful either. So you've got to find a middle ground where you do a do a bit.
Somewhere
not enough
in the
cocaine
middle
to sack your mum.
There's a line.
But enough cocaine to get somewhere.
There's a line betwixt herring and diamond, I think. The mean line that we're looking for. If you can chart that course while all about are losing theirs, you'll be a success, my son.
But I think, you know, it's so difficult. I think people can't appreciate, I think, how hard it is to sort of get that level of responsibility and money and success and attention to someone who's already attention seeking, which is both of us in your 20s, you know, and it's incredible that people get through that their 20s and 30s in show business and are normal later on. I think, you know, they're not necessarily normal at the time, but it's sort of incredible to get through it. I was looking at you. There was something saying you had a big long argument like that lasted with Mark Lamar over two different years. Basically, you saw him had a fight with him. And I can't imagine you and I mean Mark Lamar was someone else who was incredibly confident and bolshy and wouldn't take any shit at all. So the two of you getting together, I feel like would be. The worst possible thing that could ever happen.
That was a brilliant one. That was a cracker. That was a two-part beef, basically. And I'll tell the story. Normally, I'm very coquettish, and I'll say, well, if you want to read that one, buy the book. But seeing as it's you and you contributed to the book, you're special. We've established that. One nut, fair enough. You know, you're nearly dead. Oh, can I say something before I forget that you're going to love, right? This is why I found your recent health problems incredibly touching. Was I did a podcast earlier this week, and it's a guy called Chris Scullion, who's a lovely video games journalist, and he'd found out this fact. He said that out of the nearly 180 guests on Games Master, only 6 of them out of all those celebrities have died. The rest of them are still alive, and he thinks that's the greatest track record of celebrity health of any show from the 90s. And I was shit, Herring's going to be number 7. Like, that would be quite an exclusive club you would have been in there, you know, basically you and Emlyn Hughes and Bob Holness and, you know, not many people. But anyway, back to Lamar. And you know what? You know that fucking Stuart Lee would have been milking it for all it's worth if that had happened. Oh, yeah, well, you know, I fucking loved him. I was really sad. And, you know, I remember games. Oh, fuck off. Anyway, so I'm only kidding, Stu, or whatever you're calling yourself these days. So, so Mark Lamar, this was basically because I always had a thing about The Ward. It was my favorite TV show, but I was really bitter and resentful that I wasn't given the job as presenter on it, even though it was someone from there that recommended me from Games Master, and I wouldn't have got the show without it. So Mark Lamar, who I think I appeared with on the bill once when I was a young stand-up in Bristol, and I hated the fact that he was better than me at stand-up anyway. So I met him at one of these quintessential 90s video game launch parties. It was for some big game or some console. I remember the bootleg Beatles were performing, one of the finest cover bands, and Mark Lamar was emceeing. And I got into a chat with him, and that was genuinely the first night I ever did both cocaine and speed in the same night. Why rush? Take your time, Dominic. Fuck it. You know, it's like Sodom and Gomorrah at once. So that was the worst possible time for Mark Lamar to meet me for the first time. And he was incredibly nice. Oh, nice to meet you, Dominic. Oh, how are you doing? Or however he speaks. Terrible Mark Lamar impression. Jeez. And he was being very nice. And then I happened to say to him, what do you prefer more, TV presenting or stand-up? And he said, oh, I think I'll prefer the stand-up. I feel it's more authentic and honest. And for some reason, a switch flicked and I went, you fucking pretentious cunt. And he kind of was really shocked. And he's like, what? Except bearing in mind it was the first time I did cocaine, I probably said, you fucking pretentious cunt. Right? And then he was just like, what? And I just proceeded to just lambast him for how fickle and pretentious and fake he was. And
for rightly, answering your question. For politely answering your question.
And so he was really, he was taken aback, and I was probably very aggressive. And then that was that. We went our separate ways. And then a few years later, I happened to be in San Francisco filming for Games Master, and Supergrass had a gig there. And so we went to the gig, me and the team, and we went backstage, and Mark Lamar was there as well. So there's this slightly awkward thing of Mark Lamar at one end, me at there, Supergrass, big hairy mediators in between. And then we end, I said, like, look, you know, I'm really sorry, Mark. I was, oh no, that's okay. Don't worry. No, Mark, honestly, I was an absolute arsehole, and I really apologize. Oh, that's okay. That's fine. And so we chatted away the rest of the night, and then it came to leaving, and I'll never forget. We exited to this theater in San Francisco, and I turned right to go my way, he turned left to go his way, and Mark Lamar got to the corner and turned, and I hear him say, oi Dominic, and I went, yeah, and he went, you're a fucking cunt. that was the last time I saw Mark Lamar. So, yeah, it's been a complex relationship with Mark over the years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And can I just say to my mum, I'm using that word in context as part of an anecdote.
You're quoting, that's fine. You would never say that.
It's cinema verity.
It was a quote.
Cinema verity. I just remembered that I remember sudden flashback to, I can't remember whether it was you or Stu on Games Master when you were making your little movies. And one of you definitely claimed that yours was cinema verity. And I was very happy about that because I really tried, because I did philosophy A level and I ended up doing little philosophy radio shows on Radio 4. And I was I was always upset that no one ever mentioned them. It was always Games Master. So I kept trying to get in jokes about Descartes and everything into the show. And the producer in series 1 and 2 would just chop it out. And I was only very, very lucky that from series 4 onward, a wonderful man, Johnny Finch, became the producer, who became one of my best friends, who was the most well-read man in the world. He will not read anything published after Beowulf. So he started to let me drop in philosophy things. So when you guys said cinema verity, it was just like a little bit of wee came out. I was so pleased.
Oh, well, that's lovely. And so, look, will it ever return? Will Games Master come back? And if it does, you could be the Games Master. You could be in the little bubble up there being scary to children.
Very awkward question that, Richard, because they are apparently trying to bring it back, Channel 4, tie in with the 30th anniversary, which is how this book came about. And they've tried to do it. The rights holders have tried to bring back the show numerous times in the ensuing period. At no point have they got me involved or even called me, and at no point has it ever come off. Make of that what you will. So yeah, I think they're trying to bring it back, but I've heard nothing about it. It's not, you know, it's not my show. It's their show. I don't have the rights. They're perfectly entitled to do a series without me. They did it before. It was shit. But you know, who knows? You might strike it lucky. So I don't know. And I don't want to piss them off because they very kindly gave me the rights to the book, but there's old 90s Dominic raising his head again. Can't resist. Can't resist it. It's the Mark Lamar anecdote. It's just transported me back into that time.
But there is, you know, there is something about you, and, you know, and maybe that's, you know, the way you got the job is sort of by happenstance almost, but it was the meeting of those things. And, you know, and the Dexter Fletcher series didn't work in the same way. So, you know, it was difficult shoes for you to step into. He's done okay subsequently.
He's done all right. He really has done okay. I mean, I don't, you know, in the same way that you don't like to be called a hero, even though you are, I don't like to compare my career to Dexter's. You know, I don't think that's fair on either of us. But
I do have to say, actually,
what is it? It is genuinely my favorite chapter in the whole book is the one that covers series 3, because I didn't even know half of what was going on behind the scenes. It was an absolute disaster. It was a brand new team who just screwed the whole thing up. And then poor Dexter was the guy that was put in front of it. And people remember him so fondly, his work ethic, him as a person. And because he's the face of a show, he carried the can. And the horrible abuse online that he gets to this day is really bad. And I think it's a fascinating chapter of the book, and it will completely change anyone's view of Dexter and what he managed to do with the show. He actually did an amazing job.
Well, it's interesting the book goes into that much detail and that you're getting the behind the scenes stuff for it. You know, it does feel the right time for it to come out. But I think the show, it needs you on some level, even if it's just like a little gremlin popping out of a hole every now and again to shout at people.
No, bigger than that. More than that, mate. More than that, Rich. Come on. Three kids, Richard. Come on. Fucking little gremlin. Do you work for Channel 4 or something? That's great. Sounds like the kind of stuff they'd come up with. Brilliant. Little fucking little gremlin. I strode the 90s like a colossus, you cheeky bastard. Gremlin.
You could dress you up in a skin tight like leotard and you just come out and go, that could be your role in it. That's what I'd like to see.
You're just full of ideas today, aren't you? You know what? I think this chemo is working out great for you, actually. Au contraire.
It's okay. I think it's the adrenaline that gets through you. It's fine.
It's going to create a fecund period, I think, in your career. Chemo fecundity. That's a good name for a band. You
know, have a ball taken off and see what happens to the rest of your life, Dominic. That's my advice to you. Just get one whipped off.
Don't tempt my wife.
It focuses.
Sorry, that was a Les Dawson type punchline. Sorry, that was a very old school comedian punchline there. Sorry.
Oh, look. We've taken up a lot of your time. So if people Google Kickstarter and Games Master,
yeah,
they will find the links to this thing.
That's it.
How long is that running? Because it might not be running while this actual podcast is going out. Will people be able to buy the book after the Kickstarter is over, or is it
not in its current form? No, there's 20 more days. 20 more days of the campaign. The campaign will run then up till about 20th of April. What are we? Okay. What month are we in just now? Are we in April? It's March.
We're about to start April.
Thank you. I don't know if it's different.
Will go out
in Canada.
Podcast will go out the day after yeah, your Kickstarter.
We have a different calendar. We're using the Corinthian calendar as opposed to the Julian or something. It's about kind of 20th of April. You can fund it until and get all the extra rewards. We've got a couple of other really exciting ones that we're hoping to release in the ensuing period.
Brilliant. Well, best of luck with that. I think it looks, the little bits I've seen are fantastic, and it's a really interesting to go. And it's just, you know, it's this little treasure trove of both a time in television history, but also like gaming. I mean, gaming in the 90s was just exploding, wasn't it, into something more than, you know, Pong. And it was a bit better. It was a bit more than that in the 80s, but the 90s was where video games were just sort of coming to life. And so I think it's a really important social history as well as a lot of fun. So
it is. It's 100,000 words. So I mean, there's a lot. You get a lot of words for your money in this, and lots of behind the scenes pictures that people wouldn't have seen before and everything. So we're very, very proud of it. And I did some, but I must pay tribute to Jack Templeton, who was the original Games Master super fan, started off as a stalker of me, became a friend. You've communicated with him yourself. He's a lovely guy, and the work he has done in this book has been incredible. He's the one that got the band back together. So Jack Templeton, thank you.
Brilliant. And what else is coming? Is there anything else coming? Did I hear you were thinking of coming back to the United Kingdom, or is that what that?
Yeah, I was going to be. I was going to come back to the United Kingdom in this last summer, but because COVID made me honestly kind of worried that my mum might die before I saw her again, and we started thinking about family, and my plan was I was going to come back, and I have a couple of ideas. I want to do Edinburgh. This last kind of the idea that I was a failed stand-up is the one last thing that I want to try and write in some way. So I had a couple of ideas for Edinburgh shows, one about that period of my life where I didn't get crucified on Channel 5. I think that's an interesting story. Not many people are famous for not getting crucified. A few people are very famous for getting crucified. Yeah, Jesus, Spartacus, let's be fair, as well.
St. Andrew.
You know, yeah, exactly. Yeah, he went all pretentious, did it in the kind of diagonal way, hipster. But I think I'm the only person that's famous for not getting crucified. Barabbas, I think, and me. So there's an interesting story there about that. And there was also, I had an idea when I was on Twitch, I used to write lots of video game songs because I've always had bands. So Dominic Diamond Sings the Video Games, I thought was a potential Edinburgh show with me in a bow tie and a full orchestra, and with Stuart Herring popping up as a little gremlin from the stage going, yeah, I mean, you know, for example. So that's been put on hold. So I've started writing another book, but like a novel about my life in Nova Scotia, which was like Royston Vasey on acid. And so I loved writing this book so much. I'm beavering away at that now. That's it. The end.
That's terrific. Well, I hope to see you at the Edinburgh Fringe. I hope to be back there. May 2022, I think, is the realistic time to go back. But fantastic. Look, I really appreciate the time. Have a lovely day in Canada.
Thank you, Richard.
And good luck with the book. And we'll see you soon. Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Dominic Diamond. We'll be back next week. Haven't got a guest yet. We'll see who it's going to be. Thank you very much. See you soon. Goodbye.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Dominic Diamond. Thank you to Pest for providing some music that we can talk over at the end of the show. I would also like to thank my producer and friend, Chris Evans, not that one, to whom I am indebted. Thank you very much to Ben Walker, not that one, and everyone at Acast, not that one. And this is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. If you enjoy these podcasts, please recommend them to your friends. Please retweet my tweets about them in your timeline. The more people who listen to them, the more revenue we can make, and that revenue goes back into making more podcasts and exciting new projects. If you want to support us with a little bit of money, gofosterstripe.com/badges. You can pay £3 a month and get loads of extra content. And all your money will go to make more podcasts. Thanks for listening, everyone. Now go away and listen to some old ones. Go and listen to some other ones from the past.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. richardherring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And gofasterstripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who's said hello so far. I do come and say hello after the show. If you enjoyed it, if you want to see me, that'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.